that $6 billion is going to eat us alive over the next 10 years if we don't try to knock it down while we still have cash reserves.
Funding for state employee pensions could put the budget in a future bind. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 19th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, friends and family of the U.S. Olympic ski team eagerly cheer from home.
I have goosebumps, guys.
Oh, yeah. Let us have the skis tonight.
I know.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Kodiak Aleutians Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues and invites public participation at a meeting February 22nd and 23rd, starting at 9 a.m. at the Kodiak Best Western Inn. More at doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Some state senators are expressing concern about the projected shortfall in funding Alaska's public employee pensions. But those who manage the pension funds say the shortfall will likely remain manageable. Anchorage Republican Senator Natasha von Imhoff says it may be necessary to reduce retiree benefits in the future. She spoke during a recent Senate Finance Committee hearing on pensions.
To simply say make the payments, that crowds out public safety, education, among other things, as we're seeing in our budget challenges that we have now.
It would take an amendment to the state constitution to reduce benefits. The state Supreme Court has interpreted the Alaska Constitution to protect both pensions and retiree health benefits from cuts. The pension systems currently have $25 billion in assets. That leaves a gap of more than $6 billion between what the state has in pension assets and the projected future cost. That gap could grow. State consultants have advised the state to expect lower investment returns in the future. Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon says the legislature should consider paying more into the fund in the coming years.
That $6 billion is going to eat us alive over the next 10 years if we don't try to knock it down while we still have cash reserves.
Soldotna Republican Senator Peter Michicki says it's premature to raise the possibility of a constitutional amendment to cut benefits.
I just want to make sure that we don't fire off an alarm that has the people of Alaska believing our system is about to implode, when in fact, if we maintain it properly in the future, I think we avert that situation.
Governor Bill Walker proposed paying $263 million into the pension system in the budget that starts in July. That's $80 million more than the current budget. Since 2006, new public workers have a different retirement system and don't receive defined benefit pensions. Instead, they receive a defined contribution system. The U.S. women's cross-country ski team went into the 2018 Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea, with the hopes of winning a medal at the Winter Games. It's never been done before, but early Saturday morning, four American women, including two from Alaska, had a chance at making history in the 4x5-kilometer relay. Alaska Public Media's Emily Russell went to a watch party in Anchorage and has the story.
To watch the American women race the 4x5-kilometer relay live on TV, I go to the home of a superfan. Holly Brooks comes to the door with her five-month-old and a red and white striped onesie.
Look very festive.
Yeah.
Brooks was on the U.S. cross-country ski team at the 2010 and 2014 Olympics, and now she's a counselor for athletes. So what do you do when your team could make history, but the race is after midnight and you've got a set of five-month-old twins? You host a slumber party.
Oh my gosh, you guys have great outfits on.
And look what I have under it.
The girls lift up their winter coats, revealing t-shirts sporting the stars and stripes.
Oh, how cool! And you have relay socks on.
At the last Olympics and at World Cup races in Europe, the American women wore flashy red and white striped socks. Brooks has worn them in a few relays herself.
You know, it's almost like you put the socks on and you're transformed into this, like, this super powerful USA relay racer.
The American women's relay team finished fourth in the last three world championships, so people here really believe tonight is the night. They pile onto the couch. The NBC camera pans across the crowd. Fans wave little American flags in the air, and one guy with a U.S. ski team hat dances in the stands.
Oh my gosh! Oh my God, who is that guy?
In Pyeongchang, the skiers jog out to the start line and snap into their skis.
Yeah, this is it.
Finland, U.S.
I have goosebumps, guys.
Oh, yeah. Let us have the skis tonight.
I know. Sophie.
American Sophie Caldwell is first in the relay. She punches her poles into the snow, bounding forward. There are 14 teams in the relay, and pretty quickly, a pack of seven skiers pulls ahead. The camera shows Caldwell in that pack, but with every turn, she falls farther behind.
Come on, Soph. Come on, Soph.
Oh, my God.
Come on.
The camera stays on the lead pack, and finally, we can't see Caldwell at all. The leaderboard shows the gap when Caldwell hands off to Sadie Bjornsson to ski the second leg of the relay. Brooks's husband, Rob Whitney, shakes his head.
We're over a minute out.
And these races, they're usually won by seconds. Bjornsson doesn't lose more time and hands off to Keegan Randall, who also holds steady. She then hands off to American anchor Jesse Diggins, still a minute back.
105.
In the end, it's Norway that wins gold. Sweden crosses the finish line just 2 seconds back, and an Olympic athlete from Russia earns bronze. Brooks leans up against her husband. I ask her how she's feeling.
Sorry, it's hard to say, but it's pretty disappointing. A little bit too reminiscent of Sochi, really, in a way.
The same thing happened. The first American leg of the relay fell behind by more than a minute. The team got eighth place at the Sochi Games.
I mean, I definitely still have hope.
Finally, Jesse Diggins crosses the finish line. The camera shows her being held up and hugged by her three teammates. These women, they're smiling. The U.S. women's cross-country ski team didn't win their first medal, but they climbed back up the leaderboard, and they finished fifth, which is their best relay result ever at the Olympics. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Emily Russell.
The women have two more races at the Olympics. The team sprint airs live in Alaska tomorrow night at 11 p.m., and the women's 30-kilometer classic race starts at 9:15 on Saturday night. Doctors have confirmed the presence of mumps in Juneau for the first time in more than two decades. The Associated Press reports Juneau Public Health Center nurse manager Allison Gaines says there has been one confirmed case of the disease in Juneau. She says there also have been three other possible cases. She says the first case was diagnosed in January, with the most recent suspected one springing up this past week. Alaska Division of Public Health epidemiologist Amanda Tiffany says this is the first confirmed case of mumps in Juneau since 1997. Mumps is a contagious disease that causes swelling in a person's salivary glands. Other symptoms include fever, headache, muscle aches, fatigue, and loss of appetite. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, industry representatives stand against the Stand for Salmon initiative.
What's implied is that currently in Alaska, salmon or anadromous fish habitat isn't protected, and nothing could be further from the truth.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds, narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Mining companies are putting money into a campaign to defeat the Stand for Salmon Fish Protection Initiative. Five mining companies have contributed a total of $1 million to the opposition Stand for Alaska campaign, including Donlin Gold, which donated $200,000. Kirk Parkan is Donlin's external affairs manager. He notes that mining companies aren't the only ones opposed to the initiative, pointing to two native corporations involved in large mining projects.
It challenges the rights of Chulista and the Kuskokwim Corporation to use their land the way they feel they need to develop. And the particular case for Donlin Gold, they selected the site for resource development during the ANCSA process, and this ballot initiative would prohibit them.
The Anchorage Daily News reports Stand for Alaska has raised $1.3 million so far to finance its campaign, most of it coming from five companies with ties to large mining projects in the state. The initiative, which is being challenged in the courts, seeks to create stronger protections under state law for Alaska's salmon streams and rivers. Kodiak may be without a fisheries analyst for a while. That's according to Kodiak City Councilman John Whidden, one of two city representatives who attended a meeting of the city and borough's joint fisheries work group last week. The analyst in the past has provided representation for Kodiak on the regulatory side of fisheries and helped interpret that part of the fisheries world. During public comment, fisherman Alexis Kawachka says it's a bad time for Kodiak to lose someone to fill that role.
We're going to have a constant battle of push and pull of what people's needs are in the state. You know, Southeast needs king salmon. Western Gulf is talking about going into a bottom fishery to kind of, you know, replace the lack of peacod. That's going to mean more interaction with king salmon. There's just going to be a constant struggle going on.
City Councilman Whidden described the end of the contract as more of a hiatus than anything else.
I fully agree. We need somebody to guide us through this. And I don't foresee this vacancy being a long-term thing. I think it's our budget will be done by May. I think the borough's probably the same time frame, something like that. So, you know, it comes right down right now to just looking at really, really difficult decisions within our community to how we allocate very, very limited resources.
The city and borough have contracted with fisheries analyst Heather McCarty for the last 4 years. The 2018 Yukon Quest is in the record book. Quest mushers and fans gathered over the weekend in Whitehorse to remember and celebrate the 2018 race. KUAC's Zoe Rome attended the finish banquet and has a recap of this year's awards.
All the mushers who completed the quest received their finishing patch. Some mushers won additional awards. Quest champion Alan Moore, who finished the race with all 14 of his dogs, received the Veterinarian's Choice Award, as selected by the vets who observed Moore and his team along the trail.
Like I said before, that means more than anything, because that's what this race is all about, is taking care of your dogs. And we want the world to know that you know, we take the best care we possibly can of our dogs, and that means everything. Placing does not mean anything compared to that.
Moore will also receive a poke of gold for being the first musher to reach Dawson and finish the race. His leaders, Dutch and Commando, won the Golden Harness Award, complete with golden harnesses and tasty steaks for the dogs. Nathaniel Hamlin, a rookie and the last musher to cross the finish line, won the Red Lantern Award as well as the Challenge of the North Award, commemorating his perseverance during the race. Hamlin started with only 12 dogs and dropped 4 at mile 101 checkpoint because of shoulder injuries. He then ran most of the remainder of the quest with just 8 dogs, eventually dropping down to 7 and finishing nonetheless. The Spirit of the North Award highlights Hamlin's rising to meet the challenge and maintaining excellent dog care along the way. Vebjorn Ashanaraitan was Rookie of the Year, finishing in 4th place. Raitan, who has been mushing since he was just 4 years old, was particularly honored to receive the award.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, just unbelievable. Getting so far towards the front was just amazing, and being able to stay up there for the whole race was just unbelievable.
Rookie Riley Dyke was awarded the Sportsmanship Award for his consistently upbeat demeanor on the trail. The recipient of this award is selected by fellow mushers, and Dyke was honored and excited to receive it.
Yeah, I'm real excited about it. Pretty cool to be acknowledged for having a positive attitude. Yeah, I had a really, really great time on the trail and enjoyed myself the whole way. And I think it just kind of reflected in how I behaved on the trail towards others. So.
The Golden Shovel Award, recognizing the best handlers on the trail, was awarded to musher Matt Hall's Smoke and Ace Kennel team. On the Yukon Quest Trail in Whitehorse, I'm Zoe Rome.
The Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly approved a resolution last week that supports and authorizes testing of a type of air pollution control technology that local advocates say will clean smoke from wood stoves and help improve the area's air quality. The advocates say they hope the data they'll develop through their testing will convince federal environmental regulators to include electrostatic precipitators on its list of EPA-approved technologies that could enable homeowners and businesses to continue operating their wood or pellet stoves. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
All eight assembly members present for Thursday's special meeting voted to support the resolution, co-introduced by Mayor Carl Castle and Assemblymen Matt Cooper, Van Lawrence, and Lance Roberts. Cooper says they drew up the measure in response to requests by members of the public who say electrostatic precipitators could offer an alternative to more heavy-handed responses like burn bans.
It doesn't solve all the problems, it doesn't have all the answers, but it's the first step, and we have to take the first step to start and to look at alternative ways to do this.
Cooper says the measure authorizes borough staff to participate in a study of electrostatic precipitator devices, which use an electrical charge to remove health-damaging fine particulates from smoke.
This resolution directs the administration to start working towards finding a way to test them and see if they work.
But clean air advocate Jeannie Olson says the local group she heads up has already been testing electrostatic precipitators in North Pole, one connected to a wood stove at her veterinary clinic, another connected to a residential wood pellet stove.
When a pellet stove has one of these installed, it's burning so clean that sometimes we can't detect particulates.
Olson says the device she's testing, called an EcoTube, cleans up emissions from her wood stove so thoroughly that it's comparable to those of a cleaner-burning pellet stove.
When I have the EcoTube on, it's typically measuring about the same levels as a pellet stove without one of them on.
Patrice Lee was among several people who spoke in support of the technology during a public hearing on the resolution. Lee, like Olson, is a longtime member of Clean Air Fairbanks, and she says she was skeptical when Olson first asked her to help test the EcoTube until she reviewed the data.
I was blown away when I saw what wasn't going into the air.
North Pole resident Wendy Mannon says she's among many who believe the technology could help people who heat their homes mainly with wood and can't afford more expensive fuels, and who often disregard restrictions against burning during air pollution alerts.
If there isn't a way that this administration and the community can come together and find a way that people can burn cleanly and cheaply, then next year people are going to continue to ignore the burn bans. They just can't afford the fuel oil.
Borough Air Quality Manager Nick Czarnecki says he's glad that advocates for electrostatic precipitators, also called ESPs, along with members of other community interest groups, will be working with the borough on developing a testing regime for the technology.
One of my biggest concerns is that we get all of the stakeholders on board and that we figure out what is the test data that we need to show that these ESPs are going to work for an exemption to the burn bans.
Olson says she wants to ensure citizens lead the effort due to the level of mistrust many area residents have for the borough because of its efforts to enforce the federally mandated crackdown on the area's air pollution. And she says citizens groups are capable of accomplishing tasks more quickly than bureaucracies. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating more than 40 years of Alaska operations.
Join Alaska Public Media TV every week for Think Wednesday, featuring a dynamic lineup of programs exploring the thrilling world of nature, technology, and science. Think Wednesday explores the mysteries of our world and our universe, bringing the most exciting and inspiring stories that provide the answers that curious minds crave. Think Wednesday, every Wednesday beginning at 7 p.m. only on Alaska Public Media TV. Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how.
Sea ice extent is near record low levels in the Arctic Ocean, and that has implications for weather patterns around the globe. Brian Bretschneider with our Ask a Climatologist segment says in the past, climate models have struggled to link ocean conditions with what happens in the atmosphere, but he says two new studies do a much better job describing that link. He told Annie Feit with Alaska's Energy Desk, what happens in one really drives the other.
What we're learning is that the reduction of sea ice is having not only an impact on how temperatures are warming, right, with the release of heat from oceans and the absorption of solar energy from the lack of snow and ice, but what we're learning is it's affecting the flow of the atmosphere. And we see the response in many cases, a deepening of low pressure in some areas, an increase of high pressure in other areas, and that affects which direction the wind comes from and where the storm tracks are located. So lots of impacts that are more fine scale than when we just think about, oh, it's warming here or it's cooling off there.
So what are those specific effects?
What we've come to understand is that the system, the response to this new state of the climate system is a deepening of the Aleutian low pressure system. So that's a semi-permanent area of low pressure in the winter months. Obviously in the Aleutian Islands, a weakening of the Icelandic low-pressure system, which is obviously near Iceland, and an increase in the Siberian high-pressure system. And these are semi-permanent features. They're typically there for months at a time in the cold season, and they drive the weather across the entire globe. And so the low-pressure Aleutian, we have this counterclockwise flow. If that's stronger, you know, it might mean more storminess, for example, here in Alaska. The Siberian high-pressure system, if that's going to be stronger, that might mean colder temperatures over there, but more northerly winds in eastern Siberia, maybe even the Bering Sea. And so that's going to affect where the storm track sets up and perhaps, you know, where the springtime sea ice conditions in the Bering Sea, the Chukchi Sea. So a lot of things that we're understanding now at more local geographical scales.
Why does it matter to know this? I mean, is there something that we can do a better job planning for, or is it just cool science?
So when we have this idea that we're in a warming world, and that you know, and we have this Arctic amplification, so things are warming faster at higher latitudes, when we just paint that one broad brush, that's very important over longer time scales, you know, over decades and centuries and so on. But understanding how these finer scale patterns are going to set up matter more on human time scales. And now we're talking interactions that are much more complicated. And as we do more of these models and we do more of these studies, we get a better idea of how things are going to change at the regional scale. You know, so for example, here in Anchorage, locally, you know, maybe that things like even just the change of the trajectory of the winds mean we could get a lot more precipitation or a lot less based on the downsloping over the Chugach Mountains. So it does matter, and it also helps to explain why that there is variability. You know, Alaska had its eighth warmest year on record in 2017, even though globally it was the second warmest year on record. Well, that in part is due to the local flow conditions. And so it's important to be able to put what's happening on a local scale in terms of a global context.
Brian Bretschneider is a climatologist in Anchorage. He checks in with Alaska's Energy Desk each week as part of a regular look at climate change in the state. If you have a climate-related question, send an email to akenergydesk@alaskapublic.org. Roller derby's popularity continues to rise across the country, and Southeast Alaska's small towns are no exception. In Wrangell, local women organized the Garnet Grit Betties years ago, and the team is still going strong. KSTK's June Leffler went to some practice to find out what it takes to play.
Christina Decker joined the team last fall.
When I mentioned roller derby, especially at work, was a lot of the older ones were like, well, you're too nice for roller derby. What do you mean? It's a sport.
Marcia McKay has been around longer, and she agrees there's a common misconception about the image of women in the game.
How tough the people are on the court, but how kind they are outside the court. Like, you just think, like, they're, like, super tough, they might be mean, and then, like, all of a sudden you see them, and then they're, like, the nicest people ever.
Some might think roller derby is a lawless playground of women punching each other. One time that might have been true, But since roller derby's revival as a club sport in Austin, Texas, about 15 years ago, the game is rough but regulated.
Yeah. We don't get elbow people.
In fact, there's a ton of rules for the game. April Einert is the veteran of the group. She's reading from the updated playbook.
If their actions create a no-pack situation, except those covered in section 5.10.2.3, see, this is where it's like legal jargon to me.
The simplest description is this. Each team has a skater, called a jammer, who's trying to lap around the track as quickly as she can. But the four blockers of the other team are trying to stop her, using their upper arms, torsos, and hips. Roller derby is played in two-minute periods called jams. The Bettys practice starting their jams over and over.
5 seconds.
The blockers position themselves side to side, forming a wall.
Tweet.
Einert, the jammer, tries to break through them. When she does, she's able to skate all the way around the track and start scoring points.
You girls are doing good.
This is not a sport anyone grew up playing, so the women are usually just bringing some basic skating experience.
Definitely a little bit more sure of myself than the first day.
What was the first day like?
Oh, I hugged the wall most of the time. Actually, for the first like four practices, the wall was my friend. But once I started getting more confident and not being on the skates themselves, things started progressing a lot faster. It's actually pretty invigorating.
Derby is a full contact sport, a first for many on the track. The women get their butts kicked physically and emotionally. In moments of desperation, they whine about having to do jumping jacks in their skates. But they know their bodies are getting stronger. Einert says she's not looking for the toughest women or the best skaters. It's about finding the ones that can commit.
You have to enjoy what you're doing or you're not going to enjoy it and you're not going to show up. So, I mean, I think that's probably the biggest key is.
Wrangell's Garnet Grit Bettys will play their first game of the season on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, in the high school gym at 4 p.m. In Wrangell, I'm June Loeffler.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Annie Fite and Emily Russell in Anchorage, Christine Trudeau in Bethel, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, Zoe Rome in Whitehorse, Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, and June Loeffler in Wrangell. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. The Western Interior Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues, and invites public participation at a meeting February 20th and 21st, starting at 9 a.m. at the Diamond Center Hotel in Anchorage. More at 800-478-1456. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management. The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside of Alaska, and it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
Public Media loves being part of your day. Thank you for listening and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.